This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is the chairman of the House Space, Science, and Technology Committee from Oklahoma, Frank Lucas. He'll join us in just a moment. First off, it's Greg McBride with Allendale on concerns about USDA numbers.
This was a little bit friendly on the corn side and the wheat side for the USDA WASDE numbers, the grain ending stocks numbers, seeing them down 25 million bushels. But the problem I still have with this corn market is that 2.131 billion bushels for ending stocks, that is still burdensome. That is still a little bit too much. In order to justify the price that we've got, we need to be closer to about, say, 1.7 or 1.8 billion. So we need to see a major cut here just to be able to justify the price that we're at, sub $5.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by the Honorable Frank Lucas. He represents the 3rd Congressional District of Oklahoma, chairman of the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee, a member of the House Ag Committee, and a former chairman of that committee. That's a long title to put on a business card, but welcome back to the show.
Absolutely, Tony. And I've been on the Ag Committee, and I've been through enough farm bills, and I've been through enough battles up here in the nation's capital. I sometimes tell people I have calluses on top of political scars, but that's sometimes what it takes to get the work done.
Absolutely. Well, let's kind of jump in here, and we're going to touch on farm bill here in just a moment, but USDA has rolled out a series of programs, and now the program's called the ERP, the Emergency Relief Program. And they've rolled out the rules now for 2022, but not everybody's excited about it. What are you hearing?
Oh, Tony, this is a process that's near on maddening. We started down this trail in 2021 with ERP and had great difficulty in delivering the program resources. So the secretary says that for 2022, we'll rewrite and we'll make it work better. I actually brought this to his attention in a hearing some time ago that the way ERP was working was not functional. And always understand, I'm an old school ag economist. I'm an old school wheat and cattle guy from the 3rd District of Oklahoma. Resources should follow production, because farm bills are about raising food and fiber so that we can feed and clothe, take care of ourselves, and have a little extra to sell into the world market for cash. The secretary's perspective on this, or at least the language written for the 22 ERP, is much like the White House's perspective, which is dollars in the farm bill, dollars in the program, including ERP, should not follow production, but they should be allocated to you based on who you are and what you are producing, or as they like to say up here, be socially responsible and environmentally responsible. That's maddening to me, Tony, because if you're taking money to address weather issues and conditions beyond a producer's control, but you're allocating it based on who the farmer is and what they're growing and how they're growing it, then that's defeating the whole purpose of the Farm Bill safety net since 1933. So we're all pushing back hard. Matter of fact, I am told from my constituents in Oklahoma that basically the local FSA offices have almost ground to a halt, because a number of producers have figured out that the way the administration is working this, if you don't claim yourself to be a minority, you're going to be locked out of the program. So suddenly you have, I am told, an incredible number of people trying to come up with a way to legitimately reclassify themselves so they qualify. That is amazing and would not be necessary if USDA and DC had just handled the resources in the traditional way of doing it. So if I sound a little fired up, Tony, this ERP stuff is maddening, and it's causing people to do gymnastics to try and get the assistance that they should be qualified for. Oh, my goodness.
And does it really highlight the place that we are in right now? And I would imagine over 30 years, you've seen plenty of ad hoc programs come through, but is there any way that we can ever eliminate ad hoc programs, maybe through the Farm Bill.
That's been the goal of various farm bills. And if you want to eliminate ad hoc, we have a solid basic farm bill in the 2018 Farm Bill, which is based on the 2014 Farm Bill, using the principles of crop insurance to provide protection on price swings and on uncontrollable weather patterns. But it's a voluntary program. You go in and purchase the coverage you want. Yes, it's subsidized to make it viable, but you decide if you want to participate. You decide how much you want to participate, and then you know where you stand by lowballing the funding of these programs in the funding process by the rest of Congress and the request from administrations. Then we don't have enough dollars to make the programs function properly, and that's when you slide into this emergency relief program type stuff. We should not have to do this. We should address crop insurance and price protection straight up in the regular Farm Bill process, properly funded, and then we'd all know what the rules are for the next 5 years. We could all play by the rules, and we wouldn't have to go down and take a $50 spit test so we could prove that somebody in our genetic pool was classified as a minority by USDA so we could qualify. That's corrupting the programs and corrupting people.
Well, we won't see a 23 Farm Bill, and I guess I believe in miracles, but this may be too far gone to even expect a miracle on. But 24 Farm Bill kind of sounds like it could happen. What are you watching on that front?
Well, as you mentioned, I am not just an old member of the committee, but I did the 2014 Farm Bill. It started in 2012. We worked on it in 2013. Got to 14 and ultimately passed it. The third generation Farm Bill, as I describe it, took 2.5 years, which in itself is flabbergasting when all you're trying to do is to make sure that we can raise enough food and fiber to meet our needs and sell into the world economy. The 18 bill was basically an extension of the 14 bill, modified with adjustments to reflect the things that had gone on in the previous 4 years. So now we're should have done the 23 Farm Bill, but because of the environment up here, the best we could do was to extend the 23 Farm Bill, the 18 Farm Bill, I should say, out to September of 23. That probably was the best tactical move, because if you've got a USDA in D.C. trying to implement the Biden administration's principles of environmental and social justice, which is bad economics, and at the same time you have a Democrat Senate and a Republican House, the challenges are incredible to overcome. Even with a great chairman like G.T. Thompson, it's difficult to overcome. So extending us gives us more room to maneuver. I would also suggest that, like the ERP stuff, there's a variety of issues here that will change when you change administrations. I'm hoping in January of 2025 to have a new senior leadership, not just at USDA, but at the White House. And I think we'll get away from problems with things like ERP we're seeing now when we have new directives from the White House and new senior management. And don't get me wrong, Tony, I have a great deal of personal respect for Secretary Vilsack. We worked through the 14 Farm Bill process together. I think he's a very sincere individual and supports rural America. But when you're secretary, you work for the president, you deal with the White House staff, and the White House staff picks your senior leadership of your department. So he's in a tough place.
Let's move to maybe this is our final one here, but we can't predict what's going to happen in Congress anymore. We can't predict what's going to happen through the administration. Maybe we're closer to predicting what the weather will do. Weather Act authorization. Tell us about that.
Tony, in 2017, I did the Weather Act. It was the first major authorization bill on all of the weather programs in 20 years. It's now been 5 years since, and it's time to reauthorize the Weather Act. The goal of it is to make sure that NOAA and the National Weather Service have the necessary tools to more accurately predict the weather, both short-term, intermediate, and long-term, so that will enable us, not just Aggies, but folks in the energy business, everybody in their day-to-day life, to know what's going to happen, not just tomorrow morning. Is it going to freeze? Is it not? What kind of rainfall patterns are we going to have for the next 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, or projections as far out as we can go, because weather determines how we farm. It determines how much energy we consume. It determines the quality of life as we're driving to and from work. Now, the Weather Act builds off of the 2017 legislation by modifying and trying to modernize critical research programs were authorized in the first act. It also codifies several new programs that deal with weather forecasting, modeling, and predictions. And one of the things that causes the administration to go spasmic, it encourages more public-private partnerships where NOAA utilizes information from the private sector as well as their own satellites to have more data, more models to work from, to be able to offer more services out there used by the commercial sector. And also, from weather radio on down, strengthens things like the emergency preparedness. So we have more warning time when we know something is about to happen, whether it is in 15 minutes or 30 minutes or a month from now. It's just, and the science committee that's doing this, which I chair, I've worked really hard in my tenure as vice chairman and ranking member and now chairman of the committee to try and make it function like the Ag Committee. And you know, Tony, the Ag Committee is one of those committees where we may disagree by a commodity group, we might disagree by regions, but when push comes to shove, without regard to party, we're the Ag Committee, we're doing the Farm Bill. Well, that's where we are on the Weather Act and the Science Committee. We may have different perspectives, but improving the Weather Service's ability to give us warnings is tantamount to us all. And by the way, commercial services, whether it's the TV weather person or the radio weather person, uses these resources from NOAA and the National Weather Service as a part of their predictions. So it's important to all of us.
It's always good to visit with you. We're so glad that you took a few minutes to bring us up to date. We wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and will you come back and see us?
Absolutely, Tony, I will. And Merry Christmas to all of my friends out there. Hopefully 2024 will be a little simpler, a little calmer year than 23 has been.
He's the chairman of the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee and a past chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, current member of that committee as well, from the 3rd District of Oklahoma, the Honorable Frank Lucas. And this is the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, the Honorable Frank Lucas from Oklahoma.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. You can hear more interviews online, allagnews.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turn roads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
CountCon 24 is marching onward to Orlando, January 31st to February 2nd, 2024. Have your say in the future of the industry, network with fellow producers, or connect with friendly faces. Plus, the NCBA trade show will be on site with over 385,000 square feet of the latest and greatest in the cattle business to help your operation stay competitive and sustainable. Register today and learn more at convention.ncba.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
In last year's UN climate conference, COP27, U.S. agriculture was, in some cases, on the defensive about its work on climate change. But in this year's conference, just concluded,
we flipped the script for American agriculture.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack on the phone with reporters right after the conference in Dubai, which he said was a much different experience this year.
There was no need for us to be defensive, but in fact, we could articulate proactive leadership in the climate space.
For the first time, the three-day COP meeting devoted a full day to the roles food and agriculture play in climate change. And Vilsack said the U.S. got to showcase
what U.S. farmers and ranchers are doing in a variety of ways to mitigate and adapt to a changing climate and doing it in a sustainable way.
And Vilsack said from what he saw and heard at the conference,
there's real interest in what the U.S. is doing and interest and excitement in what we're doing.
Gary Crawford, Washington.